You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm Vinod Unial, and I work for IBM. And my current title is Chief Technology Officer in the Talent and Transformation Unit.
Excellent. Vinod, thank you so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. How long have you been with IBM now?
So it has been a little over 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And where do you come from prior to that?
So I have worked for large companies such as Ericsson and Tata Consultancy Services in past before joining IBM in 2015.
Oh, that's exciting. Very diverse background. Can you tell us a little bit more about your role within the organization and what falls under your purview?
Definitely. So it's great to be here. And thank you so much for having me here. So my current role is a global technology leader in IBM's Talent and Transformation Innovation Unit, which is part of IBM Services. And I support our clients across industries. So I've been in IT services industries for more than 20 years, and I've held leadership roles in various companies, as I was mentioning, Ericsson and Tata Consultancy. And I joined IBM in 2015 as a P&L leader for a couple of large strategic outsourcing accounts, and I was working with the CIOs at the time. In my current role as the CTO, so I'm wearing two different hats here. The first one is to lead the technology strategy, the technology direction and architecture for our talent platform, or we call it the Open Digital Skills Ecosystem. I also continuously evaluate and bring suitable partners to our ecosystem and also enable our sellers globally. So that's my first hat. The second part of my role is to advise our clients on learning and skills transformation and partnering with them on their digital transformation journey by leveraging technologies such as AI, big data, blockchain, and cloud, and helping them create a culture of continuous learning and exponential skilling. And I'm based out of Raleigh in North Carolina. And it has been an exciting journey so far, and I'm enjoying every day at my in my role.
Great. Yeah, definitely sounds like an exciting and very challenging role at the same time. And you're wearing multiple hats. I'm pretty sure that keeps you on your toes on a daily basis. Thank you for sharing a little bit more about that. IBM is known for its culture and employee experience. As a person in charge of talent and transformation, can you tell us a little bit more and share with us some of the strategies that have led to transformation, or, you know, the formation of such culture to begin with and becoming one of the, you know, one of the most admired companies or one of the best places to work for?
Absolutely. And I mean, as we all know, IBM has a 100+ years old history, and it has survived and thrived due to continuous reinvention and transformation that it has gone through. So in this era of business reinvention, I would say IBM had to transform and reinvent out of necessity. So over past 6 to 7 years, IBM has gone through a significant transformation. And we all know that transformation is very hard. And at that time, when we looked at what we had to do differently, one of the things that Ginni Rometty, who was our CEO and chairman at that time, she said that don't try to protect the past. So what that means is that while we are proud of our past, we had to adopt and change. So if I ask you, what is the percentage of business that we have had in last 5 years, which is totally new? The answer is 50%. Almost 50% of all the business that we currently have is totally new. I mean, we didn't have this kind of business before. So things like cloud, public cloud, artificial intelligence, big data, blockchain, quantum are all new areas, and we are actually generating 50% of revenue from these areas. So when we were looking at this transformation, we had to, of course, look at our strategy, our structure, a more flat structure, our systems that would support this transformation, of course, our culture. But I think the most important thing is the talent, right? So how do we develop the skills that we really need to lead? So we deployed several strategies to create a culture of transparency and continuous learning, which is push versus the pull culture, and self-directed learners who own their own careers and keep on learning all the time. So these were the various strategies that we have deployed. And I mean, I can talk in detail about how someone else can go about similar transformation.
Right, absolutely. There has been emergence of various roles, new executive roles. I don't know how new they are, but you know, we've been hearing about these types of roles more and more, such as chief diversity or chief inclusion officer. Are these roles part of the overall HR or employee experience functional area? Just in general, what are your thoughts on these roles and what type of role they actually play within the organization?
Well, in the new era, we have seen a lot of new roles which have emerged. A couple of roles that you mentioned about diversity and inclusion, but I would also add to the list roles like chief data officer, chief digital officer, or somebody who's in charge of culture, right? Many of these roles are within HR function, but at the same time, I've seen some of those roles actually being part of the CXOs, not really under HR or anybody else. So, roles like chief digital officer, chief data officer, they are at a different level. And I think we need all these roles because the importance of data has not been as much as it is today. And the companies which actually were not utilizing technology and data before are actually forced to utilize leverage data and technology to stay in the competition, right? And then if you look at companies like Amazon, which have really forced the retail industry to think differently, that's a great example, how some companies can really leverage data and really change the business model itself.
Right, absolutely. It's also interesting with, the times we're in with COVID and a lot of organizations shifting to complete remote mode. I would imagine that these types of roles, the importance of such roles have, increased tremendously as far as, keeping the people engaged, even the diversity of the type of skill set and the employees that are, part of the organization. So that's very exciting and very interesting. When we talk about kind of the enterprise skills gap, can you tell us a little bit more or share any case studies or practical strategies that help fill that void and develop a culture of continuous learning?
Absolutely. So, at this time, if we there is a recent study that we have seen, and 45% of the CEOs say that they don't have the skills that they need to succeed. And at the same time, the half-life of these skills is rapidly decreasing. So the fast-paced technological changes are making it a necessity to reskill the workforce. Also, due to automation and AI, almost all the jobs are changing, right? So this does not mean the jobs are going away. It's just the composition of the job is totally changing. And this makes reskilling the workforce and creating a culture of continuous learning a necessity. So the way I think about it is, if you think about the HR, there is this concept called JML, which is join, move, leave. So that's the life cycle of the employee in an organization. We have expanded that life cycle and we call it join, learn, share, practice, grow, and move. And move here is moving internally. So I'll just expand a little bit on that because that's the foundation of the entire employee life cycle and the foundation of the skills ecosystem that we have built. So joining is, you know, after you have been attracted, you get onboarded into the company and you join it. After that, once you are joined in a new role, there will always be some sort of learning, you know, whether it is through digital learning means or attending classes or attending remote classes and all that. But only by consuming digital content or attending classes, that is not sufficient. You also need to share what you are learning with others, and you can do it in sort of communities of practice. You also need to practice the skills that you have gained knowledge about. So you need opportunities, and I call them the internal gigs, you know. So in the gig economy, like, you have those gigs externally. Within the organizations, you have these internal gigs where you can practice the skills that you have gained. And with that, you grow in your current role. And, you know, if you have built enough skills, probably you are now ready to move into a different role. So that's when you move internally. And in this entire life cycle, there is AI and other technologies which actually enable the employees to get personalized recommendations for learning, personalized recommendations for peer-to-peer coaching, personalized recommendations for internal jobs which are matching with their skills. So that's the way I think about this entire skills ecosystem and, you know, creating a culture of continuous learning. And I can, again, you know, talk about certain other strategies which have proven very, very useful in IBM. So things like digital badges. You know, we have seen tremendous success with digital badges. In fact, very recently, we issued 3 millionth digital badge very, very recently. And the kind of engagement that we have seen in IBM has been excellent. So in last year, 2019, there was 27 million hours of learning which was consumed on our digital learning platform. And that actually, you know, translates into roughly 77 average hours of learning per employee per year. So, I mean, these numbers are mind-boggling, mm-hmm. but over a period of time, the kind of culture that we have built, you know, we have engaged the workforce, we have created those self-directed learners who are, you know, just continuing to build their skills on an ongoing basis, and they have sort of become those lifelong learners. And that's a you know, tremendous, I would say, you know, positive point that you have to have that sort of talent agility, because then you are able to change your organization based on the external, you know, environmental changes, right?
Right. Right. Absolutely. And those are some impressive numbers that you shared. And that's very insightful. As far as interception of technology and talent, from your perspective, what trends do you see will come out of the current times, and what areas of technology when it comes to talent are you currently researching or looking to invest in? What's interesting to you these days when we talk about different tools?
Yeah, so there are multiple areas that I would like to talk about. So definitely I would say skills is something which is the underlying element around everything that we talked about so far. So in order to build that culture of continuous learning and help the employees with their career paths and provide them right recommendations and all that, you need to have the skills defined pretty well. You know, so that's the base for everything. So we have what we call as the IBM Talent, IBM Watson Talent Framework, which is a taxonomy of jobs and roles. And there is a lot of work being done in that area currently. A lot of innovations are happening in that. And now what I'm seeing is the confluence of learning and skill building, you know, so these two areas actually converging now, right? So that's one trend that I'm seeing. Other than that, I would say there is going to be a lot of interest in AR and VR, that is augmented reality and virtual reality, and even XR. And there are certain use cases in which it actually really works very, very well. So I would say where you need to really work on some physical things. So for somebody in the manufacturing plant or somebody, you know, who is working on a device, the AR and VR, you know, really works very well in that particular scenario. Third area that I'm interested in is blockchain. So I talked about the open digital badges and the kind of success that we have seen in IBM on those sort of credentials. Now, this is actually going to move into the direction of blockchain credentials, or we call it the learning credential network, because the credentials actually need to be throughout the life of of a person. So while you are a student, you are actually gaining credentials through formal education in the college. But when you come to workforce, you are still gaining credentials and, you know, continuing to build your skills over a period of time. And now with the working life increasing to a very large extent, I mean, I believe people will have multiple careers throughout their life, and they actually need to continuously build new skills and gain new credentials. So that is where I think blockchain-based credentials will be very handy. So you can actually have your digital wallet and carry those credentials with you throughout your life, and, you know, share those credentials with only those parties that you want to share it with. So it's similar to the physical wallet that you have. So these are a couple of the interesting areas and trends that I'm seeing. Yeah.
Definitely, you know, innovative and industry disrupting trends that we've seen the emergence, and especially in the last couple of years. To shift topics a little bit, I want to talk hiring strategies for your teams, for your organization in general, for the candidates that interview with you. Tell us a little bit more. What does the interview with Vinod looks like? Do you tend to get creative with your interviews? Do you keep them pretty traditional? And more importantly, I'm curious, what do you look for in some of the responses when you hear them from the candidates?
Yeah, so I mean, I have interviewed a lot in past, and I continue to do that. So my personal strategy is to really not look at as an interview, but a conversation, so that both the parties are their authentic self. And for me, I think what is most important is the attitude and the, you know, ability to learn and being curious, so that, you know, when we are hiring somebody, so we are hiring them for their fit for their current role, right? Obviously, we'll look at the technical skills that are necessary, the soft skills that are necessary, the ways of working skills that are necessary. But I think what is important for me is to look at whether the person will be able to continue to learn going forward and has that curiosity in him or her, which will keep them, you know, relevant going forward, because things are going to change, right? I mean, whatever role or project or work that we hire somebody for, it's not going to remain static, and there will always be different demands from them. So I think for me, that learning agility is one of the main criteria that I look for.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us an example of what kind of response would lead you to, you know, to assess that type of learning agility? Do you have anything that stood out to you perhaps in one of the more recent interviews?
I can't think of any recent interview, but I mean, I would look at the proof points of how somebody has, you know, come out of their, let's say, shell and comfort setting and have done something different, right? Mm-hmm. Have they taken any sort of risk in past? Have they really gone out and have made investment into their reskilling and learning something new, right? Are you actually stretching yourself and actually continuing to learn something new all the time, right? So you may be doing your job, which is of course expected out of you, but are you actually doing something outside your job and you know, listening to others, reading something, reading a book, or reading a podcast, listening to a podcast, you know, those kind of activities. I look at those kind of proof points. And people, I mean, I really admire people who actually go back to sometimes, you know, full-time education to right. really reinvent themselves. So that would be one of the proof points for me that somebody, you know, really wanted to reinvent themselves and made that investment to go back to either college or, you know, short-term education or whatever, you know. So I right. think those are the things that I look at really.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a perfect example. So we go through interview, the candidate gets hired, they accept the offer. So for newly hired employees, tell us a little bit more about the strategies around the whole initial employee experience or employee onboarding process. What is working well for you? Or maybe what have you learned in the past from some of the mistakes you probably made? And what are some of the pitfalls to avoid if you were to give recommendation to other executives?
Definitely. And I think this is a very important question, because onboarding is the moment in somebody's life which actually creates that first impression for the, you know, newly onboarded employees, right? So you can really do it well and create employees who will be valued and who will actually add value to your company over a long period of time, right? So a couple of things that I've seen working really well is you know, engaging with the new employees even before they are onboarded. So don't wait till the day of onboarding comes. If you can engage them before that, there is nothing like it, right? So before that, if you can create some sort of platform which allows these you know, new employees to go onto that platform and understand the company culture and values and the kind of role that they will be performing, I mean, that's you know, great. And if you also, once you onboard them, then I would say the speed at which you can onboard somebody and not have them wait for things like the hardware, the laptop, and, you know, security access and whatnot is needed. Just make it as smooth as possible, right? So that's another thing that really, I would say that's sort of hygiene, you know, so there's no doubt about it. But I think the third aspect that I would say is when you're onboarding somebody, really have senior people from your organization, executives, talk to that group and provide them the you know, perspective from your view about company's culture and what is expected out of them, and also allow them to ask questions at that time, right? So I think that really works very well. And I think the last thing that I would add to onboarding process is to create that sort of buddy culture. So pair the newly onboarded employees with somebody who has been in the organization for a little bit longer time, right? So that really helps the new employee to assimilate as fast as possible. And wherever they have questions, you know, get answers to those questions very, very quickly. And just continue this onboarding process for next 3 to 9 months at least before you know, really disengage from onboarding and treat them as regular employees. So I think these are the various things that I've seen working well. And these are, I would say, you know, best practices that I myself have experienced in past as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, very insightful, because at the end of the day, that initial employee experience is of utmost importance, and that really sets the precedent for kind of their, their overall, career within the organization. So some of the examples you provide are very spot on. With so many companies going through, unfortunate events, the furloughs, the layoffs and downsizing and so forth, what has worked well for you when it comes to employee motivation and keeping the performance levels up, especially during the current times where there's so many, so many news out there in the media about the, the companies being impacted?
Yeah, that's very unfortunate that we are in this situation. And, I keep hearing about this news from elsewhere. And I mean, my heart goes out to those people who are affected by such events. So like yesterday, I was reading about Disney, they are going to, they have to lay off some 28,000 plus employees. So that's really unfortunate. But I mean, in our case, what has worked is, I would say, one, since everybody has been working remotely. So one of the things that we had to really look at is, understanding that people are working remotely and they have a lot of other things on their plate. So that empathy, towards others, that is extremely important. And instead of jumping onto the business all the time, really taking time to ask, how somebody is doing and, understanding how things are. And then being very, very flexible, I would say, because somebody who is juggling their kids' education and everything else and working from home, if we give them flexibility and to allow them to work when it is, when it is suitable for them to work, I think that is extremely important. And I think the other thing that I would add to that is communication. But I would say over-communication, right? So when people are working remotely, they are hearing all these news from elsewhere and, dealing with all these pandemic and, all of other issues. I think over-communication is something that is, is the need of the hour, right? So you can't under-communicate at this time. And I think the last thing is sort of giving that comfort and certainty to the employees that we are there to take care of you no matter what. I think that is that would go a long way in creating those relationships which will really prove very, very valuable as we start seeing start coming out of this difficult situation that we all are in.
Right. Very interesting, Vinod. Last but not least, I'm pretty sure you read a lot. And also, I'm curious, the few companies that I had worked for in the past, as part of the onboarding experience, they would always, give the gift of a book or multiple books. I wonder if, is that something you practice as well? And if not, just in general, share with us, what are you currently reading and what is one book that you always recommend to others and why?
Sure. So for me, in IBM, what I've really liked is that we have lots and lots of, learning opportunities, whether it is access to online learning or, reading online books, I would say. And I'm an avid reader, so I keep on reading, I keep on listening, and I keep on listening to podcasts and, keep on learning. So the book that I'm currently reading is called Trailblazer, and it's by Mark Benioff, the founder and co-CEO of Salesforce. I'm really enjoying this book, actually. So I think the perspective that Mark has shared in this book about really the purpose of creating such a company and being a force for good, that really resonated with me, right? So there are many businesses which do well in terms of financial numbers and all that. But I think it is important for us to realize that we are part of this global community. And we also have to take that responsibility to do well for our community. And I think that's what resonates very well for me. And I think one of the most, one of the parts that really, you know, struck me was when Mark talks about as he actually took charge of something that he didn't like. Mm-hmm. And instead of leaving it to the politicians and the judicial system, you know, he raised his voice, and then there were a lot of other corporate leaders who joined hands with him. So I think that's a change that I've seen, and it's a good change. So I really like that book. And you also asked me one of the books that I would recommend anytime. So for me, I think that will be a book by Tony Robbins, and the book is called The Giant Within.
Oh yeah, I haven't read, but I've heard about it multiple times. Definitely on my list.
Oh, it's a wonderful book. I have it, and that's my personal copy. I mean, I keep it. I again read it every couple of years and all that. And every time I find something new in that. So that's something I would recommend to anybody anytime.
Uh-huh. Right. Absolutely. Now I definitely get a copy of that and read it, because I've heard it multiple times from different good friends of mine. So. Very exciting. And for our listeners, we'll make the titles and authors of these books available in the episode notes. Vinod, thank you so much for your time and the lent expertise to us today in this very short but very, very, you know, information-packed episode. I've personally learned quite a bit, and I really appreciate a lot of the practical recommendations and actual case studies that you had provided with us today on this episode. So looking forward to staying in touch and hoping to reconnect with you on another episode just like this in a couple of years and see how much have transpired.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.